As I was saying, on the line, I should have Padraig Moore on. How are you, Padraig?
I'm fine, Shane. I'm fine. Nice, summery evening in Dublin, even though it feels a bit cold, but it's nice to get longer evenings and a bit of light.
It is. It gives people that extra pep in the step, I think, when they see the sun shining and the brighter days. And even this evening now, there was a lovely stretch until just after 6 o'clock, like, so it was great, like, you know.
It's great to see it.
So I was just chatting to people there about how important mindfulness, and I suppose, you know, mindfulness has been part of your life a long time now at this stage, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has, and I suppose I've been practicing it actively, if you like, since around 1989, something like that.
Wow.
Tracked that in 2023, which is more than I can do at this moment.
Yeah.
For a while, because I think that when I began to try it out, I was actually standing in a bookshop in Eason's, as people sometimes do, reading the book without paying for it, but I then did buy it and started trying it, and I really liked it. I think what happens is that when your mind generates, obviously, a lot of thoughts, it's what minds do, and when the thoughts are very kind of fearful or full of anxiety, if there's anger, anything like that, it increases your stress level straight away. Thoughts are physical, actually. No, when you have a thought about something stressful, straight away, your heart is beating faster and the adrenaline is flowing and so on. But I found then with mindfulness, it's not so much that you empty your mind. You can't really do that. But that when I found thoughts like that in my mind, if I came back into the present moment, which meant coming back into whatever was going on around me, outside my head, really, that broke the chain of thought, you know. And those chains of thoughts can give people a lot of stress and unhappiness, you know, in our lives. And I think that when you, with mindfulness, it's coming back again and again into this moment. This moment might be a very boring one, you know. I mean, you might just be looking at, you know, grey clouds or something, or the rain hopping off the pavement or something like that. But it's often a better place to be than in a sort of a very dark place in your head. And so you're coming back into this moment. And I always make that point because lots of people are never going to sit down and meditate, you know, on their breathing for 20 minutes. They're just not going to do it. It's not them. And so, but if you can just interrupt that rumination, as the sort of very negative thinking is called, if you can interrupt that by just coming back into awareness of what's going on in this moment outside your head, that makes a big difference. And you get better at that the more often you do it.
And it's just getting into that routine of doing it, isn't it? And catching yourself, really, like, you know?
Yeah, it's catching yourself. And I find when people do say a mindfulness course, that they'll often say afterwards that I never realised how much time I spend in my head. And people, just part of the brain, called it the default network in which your brain wanders around between past, present and future and fantasies and worries and all sorts of things like that. And we spend, if we're doing nothing else, we tend to spend about, it would appear, about 50% of our time in that mind wandering. And if we are doing something else, we often still would spend maybe 10 or 15% of our time in that mind wandering. And that's fine if it's just taking you into sort of pleasant places. But when it's taking you into, when there's a kind of a groove formed, a pathway, that when your mind starts wandering, it wanders into, you know, things that were unfair that happened and that you can do nothing about, things you did or didn't do that you can do nothing about now, anger, worries, what will I do if, again and again, that kind of thinking is quite different to planning. It's turning a wheel, you know, just turning this wheel endlessly. And with mindfulness, you don't try to analyze it. You just simply come into the present moment whenever you notice that you've gone away. And and the more you do that, the better you get at it.
Mm. Yeah, I suppose I do practice mindfulness every day, like as much as I possibly can. I suppose I probably at this stage, and but I've been bear in mind, it's not as long as you practicing it, but I'm definitely at about 70% present these days in myself, you know. And I suppose working in the job that I work in and you work in, you know, you can only be present when you're working with a client, like.
Yes, you can only be present when working with a client. And in the work of counselling and psychotherapy, we're often told that the relationship is the main thing, it's the most powerful thing in the therapy. And for that to happen, you have got to be present.
Mm.
You have to know you're there.
Well, and, you'll miss something important if you're not present, you know.
Yeah, if you're not present. And, I saw something one time, somebody said, you say you care about me, but if you cared about me, you would be present for me.
Mm.
Present in terms of just being aware of me while you're with me.
Yeah, and I wonder how many people who are listening to the show at the moment have noticed how their mind would wander when they're talking to someone and then they say something important and then they go, oh, what did you say? You know?
Yeah.
We've all done it.
We've all done it.
Mm.
The mind wanders, and that's why we have to quite deliberately practice bringing it back. And people often talk about, I'm sure you know the phrase about monkey mind, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like a monkey jumping from branch to branch.
Mm.
And that's what it's like.
Yeah.
And so we keep bringing it back into the present moment. And when you get good at doing that, then when you find that you are in, say, some very unproductive thoughts, it's much easier to bring yourself out of them.
Mm.
That's the kind of payoff in terms of mindfulness and awareness.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah. And you know, I suppose I mentioned as well that you have a book coming out now on March the 3rd about acceptance, and I suppose acceptance is a big part of mindfulness. In my opinion, it is a huge part of mindfulness, is accepting, you know, what's going on around you. And we were speaking before I came on the show about the fact that even in your book, like, I mean, you're going to have a lot around a lot of the stuff that's happening in society at the moment is going to be a lot of acceptance, because, you know, society is changing and evolving at such a rapid pace at the moment. You get kind of lost, you know, in the acceptance part of it.
It is. It's evolving remarkably, remarkably quickly, and not usually in ways that we wanted it to evolve in this place. But we have, yes, and so if you fight against the fact that we have sort of war and virus maybe and very difficult economic situation to cope with, if we fight against that fact, then we're just going to be so stressed out, because we're fighting. When you fight with reality, you always lose.
Mm.
Once you accept that this is happening, climate change, which is almost on the back burner in a way, it's funny at the moment, other things happening, but climate change, which is the big one, and maybe the housing situation, and what effect will the war have on the economy? When you accept that these things are happening, that this is so, then you begin to look at what can I do to be okay in myself when all this is going on. And one thing is not exaggerating it. You know, when we think emotionally, we tend to think in a very dramatic way, in a very exaggerated way. You know, if I was afraid that our phone line was about to break down, you know, it would be easy for me to say to myself, oh God, that would be catastrophic or disastrous.
Mm.
Wouldn't really, you know.
Mm.
When you look at catastrophes and disasters, it's not up there with them. But we tend to use that very dramatic language. And when very difficult things are going on, I think it's important not to make them worse.
Mm.
By how we talk to ourselves about it, you know.
Mm.
I think that is an important thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, just to be able to be okay with not knowing how things are going to work out.
Mm-hmm.
Let's face it, we didn't know, say 4 years ago, 4 years ago we didn't know that it was going to be a war, COVID, all of these different things.
Mm.
So you don't know the future.
No.
And we forget that all the time. And ruminating on it, going over and over, it does no good because we kind of inevitably get it wrong anyway.
Mm.
No.
And you know, I mean, I suppose the emotions that go on us, you know, I mean, it's one thing for us to stay to say to people that, you know, to try and stay present and stuff. But if you are caught up in that rumination or caught up in that those emotions, because, you know, within rumination, all the emotions and everything are coming up. It's very hard to break free of that, of those thought processes.
Yes, that is why it is it's training. What you're doing is you're training your mind, really. So I would even say, let's say when you if you're going for a walk, or if you're walking from one part of the house to another, or of wherever you're living, or from one part of your workplace to another, to just use that time just to practice coming into the moment and just being aware of walking, because it's very easy to spend that time going through the latest drama, you know, in the workplace or in your life or wherever. So to just use it, just to come into that fact that I am walking. When you're eating, just for the first minute of the meal, just to be aware of what you're doing. Obviously, if you're driving, it's a great idea to be aware of what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Very important.
And you're not aware. And so this is all training, you know.
Mm.
And if you can spend a few minutes, a few times a day, just observing your breathing, that's great, and that's also good. If you're a person who's never going to do that, just apply it to other things, you know, in your routine.
Mm.
Just do that in awareness.
Yeah, so it's all about just creating that awareness, kind of staying present. And, you know, I mean, you know, we do so many things, you know, in everyday living, I suppose, as you said there, walking. You know, I mean, the amount of people that you would say to, even, you know, driving in the Cork to Dublin road,
yeah,
and you'd say to them, you know, I've done it myself. I've kind of said, where did Fermoy go to? You know, I'm in Mitchelstown now, you know. And your mind just wanders away. Like, and when you think about it, you're driving this vehicle and your mind isn't present, you know.
It is really astonishing. And I often wonder, if you knew what proportion of drivers, and most of us are drivers, so I'm not hitting on drivers, but if you knew what proportion of drivers at any one time are just not there.
Mm.
In their head, they're somewhere else.
Mm.
It could be quite scary, and I think that the other thing too about mindfulness and about acceptance is, if you are driving along and you find yourself in, say, a delay, a hold up, a traffic jam, a fellow driving a tractor at 10 miles an hour in front of you for 5 miles, etc., it's very easy to get so worked up about that, that all you're doing is boosting your blood pressure, making yourself feel horrible. What's the point?
Mm.
When you're mindful, you begin to realize that, you notice, there's not much point in me getting upset right now because I can't do anything about this.
Mm.
Save my energy for things I can do something about. So sometimes you might not want to accept the slow traffic or the guy in the tractor, but nonetheless, accepting that is so saves you an awful lot of trouble.
Yeah.
Or equally in relationships, you know, we have, it's kind of, in long-term relationships, people always, they rub each other up the wrong way a good bit of the time, you know, that's the way it is, beings. So you have to be able to accept that there are those differences and not be getting wound up about them. Now, there's some things I know that are deal breakers, you know, that nobody should put up with.
Mm-hmm.
Quite often, even in you know, good relationships, people do get in each other's nerves now, and they have fights and rows and things. And it's often, I think, some people who work on marriage and long-term relationships would say, what matters is how quickly do you get over it, not never having them, but getting over them quickly.
Yeah.
But there again, so once you can accept all of that, it saves an awful lot of trouble and sulking and silences and all the things that go with this. So acceptance is a very powerful thing,
yeah,
I would say.
So you've written a book. It's out on March the 3rd. So if people want to buy it when it comes out March the 3rd, where will they be able to get it?
Well, it's in, I hope it will be in good and bad bookshops.
Okay.
And also online. So it should be from the second or third, it'll be, in other words, kind of this from this day week, it should be in bookshops and also online, so it's available in all of those of those places.
Yeah, very good. And it's not your first book you've written either. You've written a load of other books as well. Like so, you know, they'll be getting someone that's that has written a lot in this world of mindfulness and.
I've written on mindfulness in itself and applying mindfulness, like mindfulness for worriers, is one for people who worry. And but one of the most probably popular one that I wrote was called Kindfulness, and it's about self-compassion.
Wow, that's a lovely name.
Into yourself,
yeah.
No matter what, you know. And that book has been published in 6 or 7 countries.
Wow.
And I still see stuff coming up on, say, social media from people in different countries who've benefited from it. And I think it's because we live in a fairly harsh world. Now, I would maintain we always lived in a fairly harsh world, but it's just more obvious now, again, because of social media. But it's a really fairly harsh world. People, there's a lot of demands on people. People make demands on themselves. And so being a friend to yourself is a huge help in that kind of situation. And I always say that you need to be a friend to yourself regardless of whether you succeed or fail.
Yeah.
You know, if you had a good friend, you'd want them to be still your good friend even if you failed. And it takes away... A funny thing about self-compassion is that some of the research that was done by people who began to write about it is that people who are self-compassionate tend to be often find it easier to take on challenges because they know that if they fail, they won't be down on themselves, you know. They will still be a friendly voice to themselves. So it's safer to fail, if you like. But they tend to do well. They tend also, when people who are self-compassionate, if they've got a challenge, like let's say a diet, or you know, cutting down or staying off the drink or drugs or whatever it might be, or kind of maybe a demanding exercise regime, that if you're self-compassionate, it might sound as though being self-compassionate means you're never going to do that. In fact, being self-compassionate means that you're more likely to succeed because you kind of inevitably fall off the wagon at some stage. And when people fall off the wagon, if they're very harsh towards themselves, very hard on themselves, very often, in order to comfort themselves, they will then go on and have another slice of chocolate cake, you know, and maybe finish the whole cake. Whereas if they're compassionate towards themselves, it's much easier to climb back onto the wagon again.
Okay.
So it's very beneficial in that sense. And it's a matter of just being kind to yourself, noticing that very harsh voice in which you talk to yourself when nobody's listening, and which calls you all sorts of names and condemns you for all sorts of things, and just letting that go silent, and also realizing that there's at least 7.5 billion people in the world. So at any one time, if you screwed up today, there's probably millions of people who also screwed up in more or less the exact same way.
Yeah.
You know, and if you're feeling bad, there's millions who are feeling the same way. Equally, if you're feeling fantastic because something went really well, there's millions of people feeling fantastic. And the importance about that is, you don't have that sense of aloneness or isolation, you know?
Yeah.
You're part of a kind of a worldwide community of people who are not all that different to us.
Yeah.
You know, we're unique in one sense, each of us. But in fact, on the other hand, we're not all that unique.
Yeah.
I don't think.
So that's about the end of our show now, and you know, our conversation. So thanks very much for coming on the show. I really appreciate your advice, and I know it was only a short taster, really. Like, but you know, I would encourage people to buy your new book that comes out next week, and congratulations on it. And they can also find many of your other books, I'm sure, online.
Yeah.
Or inside in good and bad bookstores.
So
enjoy the rest of your evening, and thanks again for everything. Thanks, Borg.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks.
Bye now.
Bye-bye. Thank you.